Chapter 12, Why We Are What We Are. Now this is quite unlike the usual practice of non-theoretical science, and no doubt filled with postulation. The proposal is to try to use common thought or wisdom to explain why we have two ears and walk more or less upright, fart, and burp. You must forgive me if I occasionally escape the heady exertion of the highest form of pursuit, that of wisdom, with the lower forms of humor, but I just can't take myself quite that seriously. It's very convenient in this life that we begin as a baby, and there is no absolute knowledge that we always begin as a human baby. We can never really know what happens in the next edition of our lives, since we don't even know if there is one. But it certainly seems very likely. When I go to sleep, I'm simply a thought process shutting down and not a physical body that is undergoing any sort of rest period as commonly thought. Since there is no body, death can only be the tiring of the drive that keeps us going in life and a wish for a fresh start. Since there is no body, there is no actual change that takes place in death except the change of thought and the forgetting of the life that is. We would, in death, therefore have to remember what it is to be human, yet forget what it is to be us, personally. But this is postulation, because we might not remember anything at all, and as a newborn whatever, develop our own existence from preference. In either case, our caretaker would exist prior to us, or at least seem to. We would see the face of our mother first, before we even realized that we existed as a separate entity, and would design the facial features of this prior entity, our mother, that is, and then copy them to ourselves, our fathers, and siblings as they develop within our kin. Just because this makes sense, there's no reason to believe it. This is an analytical postulative thinking. This is analytical postulative thinking and bears no resemblance to absolute development type of thinking that created the laws of reality. The idea, fact, that is, that we are all a single entity isn't a guess or a postulation, and it's what we have left after we take away all the guesses. This is called absolute and cannot be called into question by any other consideration except one. Citing a further fact that we can really not know anything for sure would seem to overturn the absolute portion of this discussion, but the two parts of this wisdom must be born together. You can think of the laws of reality being as close to the truth as we will ever get, or ever be able to communicate, and think of the true tenet of not knowing for sure as being their test. Obviously, this makes no sense at all. And that, unfortunately, is what enlightenment is all about. You can try to grasp it, but you really can't. And if you understand that, then you know everything there is to know, so sue me. As we create our mother's face, the two eyes would be the first, and only be represented by a darkening of two patches and also some lightening features as these two spots develop. Why there would be two spots is unknown or unpostulated, and maybe a later development, but bifocal vision is mandatory for any being because it is the only way to get the feeling or illusion of depth in what we see. A third spot would also develop as the soothing sounds that encourage the baby, that's you, to enter this new reality. In order for you to interact with this reality, you would extend a hand, and one hand would just not be enough, but three would be too many. This might explain why we have so many things like arms, legs, eyes. I was going to include nuts and tits, but never mind. Two legs make it possible to walk, and the joints placed as they are only make sense. Perhaps this can explain how the human was developed. If you look carefully at any skeleton, for any kind of animal, bird, or reptile, you would see that they are all designed the same, with some bones, finger bones, lengthened to facilitate wings in birds, and some repeated many times as the ribs of a snake, with others like legs and arms being prehensile, that is, missing in the snake. Exoskeletal creatures are truly unique unto themselves, and some creatures like caterpillars and worms have no skeletal structures whatever. There might be two kinds of memory that cause the universe to be recalled, or humanness to be recalled, after we are reborn, and our own personal memory to be lost. In that way, the human form would have gone back countless generations and will continue for countless more, but probably with some slight variation each time for the sake of interest. Otherwise, being human might be an utterly unique experience this time around, and chances are we will never know anything about this. There is also the time of the earth that is puzzling. Why do we find ourselves in this particular age? From a solipsistic point of view, you were born well within the industrial age. The dinosaurs are a figment of your imagination, and the caveman, or even Shakespeare, never existed, and you, in fact, wrote all the works, every song you ever heard, and every movie you ever saw. That's from a solipsistic point of view. From a figmentalist point of view, you were born well within the industrial age. The dinosaurs never existed because no humans were around in the time, and their bones are imaginary. You may have at one time been Shakespeare, and not only appreciate his works, but are partly responsible for their creation, as with all songs and movies. From a materialist point of view, you were born well within the industrial age. The dinosaurs are proof that you evolved from them, and matter in general. At best, you may be a descendant of Shakespeare, took no part whatever in the production of his plays, and probably don't even understand them, listen to punk rock, can't play a note, and hate all movies except Rocky Horror. From a Western or European religious point of view, you were born well within the industrial age. The dinosaur bones were created by God to test your faith, because it's impossible to believe in both evolution and creation. Shakespeare is among the plays you are allowed to watch, but you took no part in their creation. Your pastor advises against any rock except, especially punk, and you have no idea at all what Rocky Horror is. Well, those four options pretty well cover all the perspectives apart from aliens put us here. And you will notice that our age and limiting factor of how long we lived has placed us all within the industrial age, or post-industrial age, as some might point out, atomic age, space age, information age, whatever. This is the time in the history of humanity, and the Earth, that everything is undergoing cataclysm and momentous change, and you are right smack in the middle of it. You are just another human on a planet of 6.7 billion, that in 1950 was 2.5 billion, So there's a cataclysmic figure right there. Within that time, we have gone to the moon, created worldwide communication, are experiencing the end of oil production, may be the big victims of worldwide money fraud, are approximately 1 year beyond our boom times, may soon experience an attempt at a single world order, and have discovered that we don't really exist, we just think we do. But just why are we the way we are, apart from our physical traits, which are very open to conjecture? Why are we such warlike idiots? We know that we are just one entity, or at least some of us know that. So why would some portion of ourselves be fighting another portion? It seems that some of us are duped by the quest for money and power, as if those things can really bring happiness. I'm afraid I just don't have an easy answer to this problem. Part of it seems to be the ability to deceive. This can lead to an escalating problem between classes of people, cultures, and races. To try to say that some of us are just unworthy and evil is incorrect, because none of us have the capacity to continue day by day without hating our perceived enemies, and even if we refuse to act against them, turning a blind eye to evil that is cast in any direction makes us equally guilty. We are very imperfect in this aspect. The simple pastime of a little old lady reading a murder mystery and vicariously enjoying the retribution meted out to the perpetrator is absolutely vile, though considered harmless by our society. Watching Arnold Schwarzenegger murder 20 or more of his enemy in a bloodless Hollywood movie style is perverse to the nth degree, but just an afternoon's entertainment for Western or European people. It's no wonder we are desensitized when we see the real carnage on the news, and we make little or no comment about either of, these things. The most unthinkable aspect of all this is that we are brutal monsters, and one of the reasons that we cannot know another entity such as ourselves is that the two would fight for dominance until one was annihilated. The only reason that we maintain some modicum of peace on this earth is because we really don't want to completely wipe ourselves out. To give you an idea of how benign and pervasive our callous nature really is, I will use this example. Ask anyone if they think that the population of our earth is too high, and if it should be reduced. Almost all will agree that it is too high, but will only be concerned about the method of reduction if it involves them or their loved ones or some outright atrocity. The boom times of oil usage has ballooned our numbers, and now that it's fading, will create more and more competition for space, food, and luxury on this tiny planet. And the simple wish for lessened numbers displays our gross failing as a caring lot. Namron Sor.